This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody, on this sunny Saturday. Hope everybody's having a good one because it should be good today. And, of course, I think all the excitement both in town and out of town because you've got everybody over in Pullman, 100,000 people out there trying to just get ready for what's going to be a crazy game between Oregon and Washington State. Big game for the Huskies in the sense that they've got to take on a pretty good Colorado team. And that 12:30, kind of nice because, I mean, not the late starts as normal, 12:30. And 4:30, so that were 12:40 and 4:30, so that's not going to be too bad. But lots of stuff. Of course, it's a bye week for the Seahawks. But let's get started with headlines. All right, so baseball got the World Series just waiting to find out who's going to be the National League contributor. Milwaukee gets a 7-2 victory last night over the Dodgers, so there's going to be a Game 7 tonight. Doesn't get any better than that with a Game 7. Boy, you got total excitement in that regard. So that should be fun. And that's, of course, coming up. And, of course, anything can happen in a Game 7. It's been pretty interesting so far in baseball. Big trade yesterday. Carlos Hyde, Cleveland Browns, end up going to Jacksonville, a team right now that's just decimated with offensive injuries. He goes for a fifth-round pick. You know, basically, Yeldon's out there as the starting running back, but they really don't have anything else. Leonard Fournette, he's not going to be able to go. And so basically it's a bad situation for Jacksonville, but at least they get the fifth-round pick. Kind of wonder, the trade deadline is going to be October 31st. Some other news as far as the National Football League, it's Indianapolis. They could be down another four starters. I mean, defensive lineman Danico Autry, tight end Jack Doyle, Ryan Grant, wide receiver, Clayton Gathers. But it looks like T.Y. Hilton's going to be back out there. Looks like they're going to give it a try right now with Jason Peters with that bicep problem that he has. He has a torn bicep. Tampa Bay, the defense right now, it's not going to have two starters. Vinny Curry out with an ankle injury. Gerald McCoy is out with a calf injury. Two quarterbacks down. Ryan Tannehill, he's going to be out a couple weeks with a shoulder injury. Josh Allen is going to be out for Buffalo, and he's got an elbow injury. For Washington, they're going to be down two wide receivers. Jamison Crowder with an ankle. Paul Richardson, the former Seahawk, with a shoulder and knee problem. Detroit does look like, Ziggy Ansah is going to be a game-time decision with his shoulder. He's missed so much time. And of course, Cooper Kupp's going to be out. That's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Rams because that's a team that has only run, I think, three receiver sets all year. And so now we'll get to see, what they'll do with Kupp out because, Josh Reynolds is the next guy up. And there's a big drop-off there for San Francisco. Dante Pettis out with a knee. Jimmy Ward is out with a hamstring injury. He's listed officially as doubtful. Big decision for Chicago is what's going to happen with Allen Robinson and Khalil Mack. Both are game time decisions. Robinson with a groin and Mack with an ankle. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. Welcome back from town. How was your little trip to England, sir?
It was long. I can say that. Long.
I can imagine. But you know what? You came back with good tidings. You got the Hawks came back with a W. That's a good thing.
That was good, yeah. No, I thought that was pretty good because they needed something. I mean, they needed to it's one where you can see the running game's getting better. You can see there's a lot of positive things right now. Defense getting better. Did you see that Al Riveron from the league did say that should have been an illegal hit, a personal foul on Bradley McDougal on one of the hits.
With the little wide receiver, Cooper, what's his name?
Yeah, on Amari Cooper.
Yeah, Amari Cooper on that. Yeah, yeah. I saw that. Yeah, he said that. Well, right quick, Mr. Clayton. What do you think about that Carlos Hyde trade? I know Carlos Hyde was doing pretty good with Cleveland. I know they want to get Nick Chubb in, acclimated into the running game, but it's always pretty good to keep two or three good, decent running backs on your roster. What do you think about that?
Well, see, here's the puzzling thing, because what I didn't understand, and now it comes clear that they've kind of cleaned this up. They pay a little over $5 million for Carlos Hyde. They draft Nick Chubb in the second round, and then they have Duke Johnson on the roster, and they give him a contract extension of $5.2 million. So now, all of a sudden, your backup running back is making more than your starter, and you've got more than $10 million tied up in two running backs. To me, when they did that, it didn't make sense. And now it makes sense.
Jermaine Crowell, too, over there.
What's that?
You also got Jermaine Crowell over there.
Oh, no, he's with the Jets.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right.
Yeah, he left.
He was there with...
Yeah, Jeremiah Crowell.
Now you're down to two decent running backs.
Right, and so I think that's okay because, mm-hmm. I mean, and that's what I didn't understand. It's like, how do you pay two $5 million running backs and have Nick Chubb, who is pretty good?
Yeah. The only thing I would say to that, Mr. Clayton, the only thing I'd say, Nick Chubb, if you look at his history throughout college, he had a propensity of having some nagging injuries, or some major injuries. He had two knee surgeries on both of his knees. Would you just throw caution to the wind as far as just getting rid of it? Because if something, knock on wood, hope nothing happens to him, but if something were to happen, then you'd be down to one running back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right,
I mean,
right.
I thought their little combination was working pretty decent for them right now. And to allow themselves to, I know you want the depth, and I know you want to get into the draft to keep building your team, but I think I would have kept Carlos Hyde around.
But see, also, there was a problem in the room because, I mean, Duke Johnson was complaining, and you think about this, it's like, okay, so you got $5.2 million tied up in Duke Johnson, and he has 19 carries in six games, and he's rightfully complaining. It's like, why the heck did I sign a contract extension? Then you have Nick Chubb, and he only has like about, 12, I think. I mean, he has like, I think, 16 carries and 173 yards.
Yeah, understandable. They fire McCoy over there in Arizona, and they bring up Byron Leftwich. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Too fast, I think.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, you knew it was going to happen. I mean, that was a game on Thursday that somebody was going to get fired. It was either going to be Denver's defensive coordinator because he had given up two games and 200-yard runners in each of those two games. So he was either going to get fired. Vance Joseph, if they had the fifth straight loss, he might have got fired. And you knew that for weeks they were on McCoy. And so it was a bad offensive day, and that was a horrible offensive day, that he was going to get fired.
Oh, God, yes. That was terrible, Mr. Clayton. That mm-hmm. was awful. I mean, maybe it is because he's working with a young quarterback. That could be the issue. I know a lot of folks, they want to push these rookie quarterbacks into the fray right quick and expect for them to be the savior of the team.
Right.
But I think you have to sit back sometimes, and that process has to work. Not every rookie quarterback is going to come out there and just blow the NFL up.
Right.
Don't you think sometimes there's a little too much impatience?
100%. I agree with that.
Yeah. With some of these maybe owners, the fans are probably pushing them because they want to see it happen now.
Mm-hmm.
I just think sometimes you got to let that process work and see how it comes out. Because, this is a rookie head coach over there in Arizona.
Right. Well, see, and that's the thing that I think people don't understand, or not the people, owners. Now, fans are always, when something goes wrong, they want change. I mean, you saw, two weeks ago, everybody was crying for Brian Schottenheimer to get fired.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, which was crazy. And then, what people and owners forget is that if you change coaches, you change systems. So go into Steve Wilkes. Okay, now again, this was not a change that the Cardinals wanted to make, but Bruce Arians retired for health reasons. All right, so mm-hmm. that's understandable. Now you have to go and you get a defensive coach. Steve Wilkes comes in. They don't have a three. They had a 3-4. They go to a 4-3. And pieces don't fit in the 4-3 like they did in the 3-4. So you look at the linebacking core, and that's a problem. I mean, so
yes.
Deion Buchanan, he doesn't fit. And so, he sits, and then some of the other guys don't play well because they're used to either two-gapping or whatever. And so that adjustment was not made. And so now it takes a year or two to sort all that out. But, of course, here you are seven games in and making judgments. And, of course, here's where I'll also look at the craziness of all the coaching firings. If you look at, like, the 10 worst teams – and again, take Atlanta out of the mix, and I'm just kind of going over the 10 worst records. They're all in like the first or second year coaching.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Because what you just said, you got to recognize when you hire a coach, his scheme, his style to your personnel.
Right.
Just like you said, you got 3-4 personnel on the defensive side, and this guy comes from the Carolina Panthers that runs a lot of one gap penetrating 4-3 personnel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not gonna work. It's like Bill Parcells when he went to the Cowboys. He stayed in the 4-3 and let Mike Zimmer run the 4-3 because he knew he didn't have the personnel to run the 3-4.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, if you go back to, I think it was 2004, because I remember I was down there at Oxnard, and that was when he wanted to go into the 3-4. Because they did a great job, because that was the year they drafted DeMarcus Ware. I mean, they took like three defensive linemen. And I remember Jerry Jones resisting the move to the 3-4, because I remember standing next to him and asking him, it's like, hey, so you're going to make the move to the 3-4? We'll see. And then finally he allowed it, and it really allowed that defense to ascend.
Yeah. They have got to recognize some of the things. When you bring a different coach in, mm-hmm. you're going to have some growing pains with that coach. You're going to have some of those options are going to, like Denver today, for instance. This is Vance Joseph's second year, right?
Right.
Over there in Denver. Case Keenum, do you call him a knockout, dragout type quarterback?
No.
You know, they haven't fixed that ailment right there. As far as Denver is concerned,
mm-hmm.
you know, he got after the defense. Of course, the defense got some pick sixes, and they were feeling good out there against Arizona. You got to remember, they were playing Arizona. But you're not going to cure that ailment with Case Keenum at the helm at your quarterback position. You're going to always have that problem over there in Denver, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but hey, right quick, Mr. Crane, we got a couple of nice games coming up this week. The Saints in Baltimore. That's a tough game.
That really is. I like Baltimore a lot. And obviously, I like the Saints. I mean, right now, I think the Saints are the number two seed in the NFC. Mm-hmm. But this is going to be tough because Baltimore is very stout against the run. They're okay, although I'm still kind of puzzled why Jimmy Smith isn't starting right now. He's been back for two games, and he's been more of a backup. We'll see if he gets back his starting job. So kind of thought that was a little different.
Not Jimmy Smith. He's also coming off an Achilles injury, right?
Right, that's true. Good point.
Yeah. So do you think he's 100% coming back from that situation right now?
We'll see.
It's a high probability. Speaking of another firing, Mr. Clayton, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers fired Mike Smith as the defensive coordinator.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and now you're saying that Curry and McCoy is not going to be at the helm on that defensive line coming up Sunday. How do you see them with the Cleveland Browns coming to town?
I think Cleveland has a good chance to win this one.
And I would tend to agree. Because, I mean, Cleveland plays pretty good football on the defensive side of the ball.
Right.
Now, I know they're working with a rookie quarterback, but yet on that side, you know, that little Mayfield hasn't been real bad.
No, he's not. I think he's going to be a good one. I mean, he makes too many turnovers. And I'll tell you the one thing and this is not his fault. This is the fault of the players. It's like they have too many drop passes. I think one out of every 10 passes he throws, there's a drop pass.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. You know, you're just talking about Khalil Mack. Mike, is he questionable for that game?
He's questionable. Game time decision. Yeah. I think he'll play.
Yeah, he's got going against Tom Brady. Now, are you impressed with New England's defense?
No. What? I mean, the defense that gave up 40 points to Kansas City? No. Am I impressed? No. How can I be? They gave up 40 points. They're terrible.
That was a good response, Mr. Case. What do you think about
that? Well, hey, JB, I got to run.
All right, Mr. Clayton.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Oh, John.
They're bad. They're really bad.
What has become of my beloved silver and black?
Oh, I mean, they are awful.
Yeah, to paraphrase the great Vince Lombardi, what the heck is going on around here?
Isn't it amazing to think how bad they are?
Oh, John. You know, I've tried, though difficult, to piece together some type of rationale for the woeful performance of the second regime of Gruden, and I think it boils down to maybe three interrelated concepts. One, history. Two, power. And three, leadership. And maybe I can talk to you about some of those things. I mean, with history, I mean, I think sometimes we neglect drawing the wrong lessons from history, and the silver and black are notorious for this. I mean, I wasn't in favor of bringing Gruden back. I mean, the past is the past, and I thought that the press reports were just rumors that happen every time the Raiders want a head coach. And once the decision was made, I began to hope things could possibly be better, but I remained skeptical. And then, you know, you just can't go back, John. That's really what it amounts to. I mean, but if you want to draw the proper lessons from history, here's what you can look at. Look what Gruden did with his first stint with the Raiders. I mean, and under his rookie year, he head coach, 1999, they were 8-8. 2000, what were they? 8-8. Then in 2001, they went up to 12-4. Now, Gruden is not Sean McVay with a QB that is still on his rookie contract. Nor, for that matter, does Gruden have great D players or have the great Wade Phillips like McVay does. Plus, he doesn't want to inherit a Jack Del Rio team, and he knows he inherited a Tony Dungy team with Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
So the only solace we can take, Raider Nation, is that, and you and I have talked about this, John, is that they're not going to make the playoffs. I mean, you and JB were just talking about this earlier. These things take a long time to get underway. So thinking about the playoffs was a bunch of poppycock, I thought, then.
Right.
And with all the changes, with the new regime takes place, I mean, sadly, this has proved to be correct. And then let's talk about power. I mean, you know, the great Lord Acton from the 19th century in England said, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. In other words, issues surrounding power is not a new concept. I mean, just think about it. I mean, this guy has no checks and balances. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you've given this guy a 10-year, $10 million contract. I mean, it's bound to exacerbate what now a lot of people call the power paradox, where people do crazy things even if they have the best of intentions. I mean, look what happened with the Khalil Mack trade. You and I have talked about this. That personnel decision has proved to be disastrous. I mean, and then you're gutting the team with a bunch of retreads. You're benching and cutting players without any decent explanation. I mean, the organizations call these things controlled, and yet Mark Davis has given Gruden unfettered access to all this stuff, which proves to be, you know, look, there are very few benevolent dictators, John. And then lastly, let's talk leadership. I mean, for God's sakes, Gruden's always been great with the X's and O's, but, I mean, he's shown little emotional intelligence or have considered thoroughly the morale of his team with all these changes. I mean, this is inexcusable for a leader of a football team. I mean, look, let's talk about the M's. They even addressed it adequately. Robinson Cano was gone for most of the year last year, but they played exciting baseball, and they were competitive for a large part of the last year. You don't see Belichick lose in the locker room because Edelman was lost for four games, or Gronk isn't as effective as he was last year, and they're still competitive, and yet Gruden has failed in this leadership capacity, John. And then lastly, they just look terrible on the field. I mean, the rank and file, Gruden's troops look terrible in the less than potent Charger team, where they actually had a home field advantage in Carson, and they looked even worse in London. You were there, John.
That was horrible.
I know,
I mean, it was horrible.
Kamele was not there for the last two games, and this may influence the two rookie tackles on the O-line, but you've got to play competitively, John, and they haven't done that at all. I mean, am I surprised? Not really. Is it understandable? Yeah, it hurts. It's understandable. But for gosh sakes, John, this is terrible. Anyway.
And then, of course, the news comes out, and they overuse Marshawn Lynch last week. He gets a groin injury, and I think he's done down here.
I think you're right, John, and that's unfortunate because
he's going to miss at least a month. Yeah, he's going to miss at least a month, and you know they're going to have to get a. I mean, you know that they're going to probably, you know, put him on IR.
Yeah, I mean, initially they were good about modulating what Lynch was doing because they wanted to keep him for, you know, the latter part of the season. But for gosh sakes, they overused him, and look what happened. It's just so many things, John. Just so many things. I'm apoplectic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and those are the three things that I've come up with as far as what to try to figure out what's going on here, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah.
No, it's bad. I'm stunned at how bad it is.
Me too. And you know, and in his press conference previously this week, he says he's happy with the effort. Are you serious, John Gruden? You're happy with the effort of your team? Dude, you've gone about ruining whatever effort they had for a chance to play competitively.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not good. It is not good, and I'm rational, John. I mean, a lot of the Raider fans want this guy's neck already, and I think that's not healthy.
No, no,
that's not
I would agree.
But geez, John, I'm just so.
It really is horrible. I mean, I just the product and then the decision making. It's just not good. I don't get how they're making the decisions. And I'm never a big fan of a head coach making the personnel decisions. Maybe
right.
I can accept Bill Belichick, and obviously because he's as good as you can get. But other right. than Bill Belichick, I mean, who's really good at that stuff?
Right. Well, let's talk about someone who can actually run a team. I mean, Belichick, you know, you can say all you want to about his press conferences, but I thought it was brilliant what he said about Lawrence Taylor earlier in the week.
Oh, yeah, agreed.
Someone was trying to compare Khalil Mack to Lawrence Taylor, and it was laughable. I mean, he's going, look, Lawrence Taylor is in a category by himself.
Right.
I mean, or whatever he said. I mean, you know, he coached Lawrence Taylor. I mean, Lawrence Taylor changed the game.
Mm-hmm.
More so than anyone I can ever think of. You know, maybe Deacon Jones, but that was many years ago. But, I mean, Lawrence Taylor changed the game, John.
Agreed.
Mean, Khalil Mack, he's a great player. He might be.
But you can't say he's
–
no, there's
Lawrence
no
Taylor.
Way you can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's no Lawrence Taylor. Well, John, you know, the late, great Paul Allen, you know, they haven't talked about this at all, but, you know, remember when the Rams and the Chargers and the Raiders were thinking about going to L.A.?
Right.
And what turned the discussion around so that the Rams got their franchise in L.A.? It was Paul Allen, remember?
Mm-hmm.
He was at that meeting.
Yeah, because he basically got up there and said that, hey, it's like, what are we talking about here? We've got somebody that's willing to pay for this. What are we debating? It's like, yeah, this is own money right here. It's like, what are we talking about?
Right. And he talked about how Paul Allen was such a great, he was a problem solver. And
right.
he comes into this meeting, and he was always very quiet. I think everybody knows that about him. He was a very private man. And, you know, but to his credit, he goes in there and he goes, look, here's how you solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, it turned everybody around. And, you know, you've got some very A-type personalities in that room with all those owners, John. You're closer to them than I could ever be. But you know what I'm saying? So that says something about him, too, the gravitas that he had, actually, that he held among his colleagues and his cohort there, which is really remarkable and will have a lasting impact on the NFL, I think, John.
No, it really was. That's a big loss. Yep. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Okay, John. Take care.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to David in Lacey. Hey, David.
Hey, good morning, John.
Morning.
Hey, I'd also like to talk to Raiders, but I want to look at it from a different point of view.
Okay.
I was born in Oakland, born and raised in the East Bay, lifetime Raider fan. I followed them. I've been in the military. I follow them around the world. You're not going to find a more loyal Raider fan than myself. But I have reached the ceiling with the Davis family. I've just had enough. And the way that this organization has been run for the last 15 years is so dysfunctional. This whole thing with Gruden, it just makes no sense. Sure, this team needed a few players here and there. What team didn't? Maybe even a few more. But to blow the whole thing up the way that they're going about it, to reset everything again and restart again, I'm when they go to Vegas, I'm not going with them. I'm going to switch over, and I've been up here in the Northwest for the last 30 years. I'm going to become a Seahawks fan. It's just too hard to follow the Raiders. I have just had enough.
I can understand the frustration because I didn't understand. Because remember, and it seems like there's almost like a concentrated effort to ruin all the things that Reggie McKenzie did. I mean, you know, the two safeties they took in the first two rounds. I mean, you know they're going to trade Carl Joseph. And he's a first-round pick from 2 years ago. And that's crazy.
They're going to trade him. They're going to dump Cooper. Although I don't really have a problem with Cooper. I lost faith in him when he started dropping too many passes. But it's the way that the organization runs itself. It's the Davis family is continually enamored with going backwards and being nostalgic that somehow that decision is going to move the organization forward. What we're doing right now is we're resetting the Raiders long after Gruden will be gone, because I think he will be gone. I think he's going to actually back away because he's going to come to the conclusion he's overwhelmed with the modern game. The game just does not work the way that he wants it to. The collective bargaining agreement doesn't work the way that he wants it to. And I think he's going to, at some point, he's going to walk away. And the Raiders are going to be left as a completely demoralized and broke-down organization again. Not just for the first time or the second, but again, we put ourselves in a horrible position where we've got to build ourselves back up again. And I directly attribute it to the way Mark Davis is running the organization. And I think he picked up on some of the things that his dad did at the end of his career that weren't very good for the organization also, with just reckless behavior that you just can't ask your fans to wake up each day and continue to support people who run a business like this. It's just too much. I've had enough.
Okay. Well, sorry to hear that, but I'm perfectly understandable. And I think there's a growing number of people like you. They've got to be frustrated. Hey, thank you, David, for the phone call.
Thank you, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming back, we'll talk to Michael Schonduger of the Athletic, talk some Seahawks and more. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And joining us is Michael Schonduger from the Athletic. And how did you enjoy your trip to London?
London was amazing. I was there for a week. Saw all the sites, did all the touristy stuff, I got to try a bunch of different food. One of those nights, they gave us like some pig blood or something. So, and that's a no-no for me. I didn't know that before that day, but I decided that day that pig blood is a no-no.
Who gave you pig blood?
It was a really fancy restaurant, but this restaurant in particular, I don't remember the name, but they'll just do anything to the pig. I mean, they'll give you the foot, they give you the head, they give you the blood, they give you the neck. Doesn't matter. Do anything. So I don't eat pork, so that was easy to avoid. But there was a lot of different things they were able to do with a pig. But that was probably the strangest food experience I've ever had. They also gave me a whole fish. I ordered fish. I thought I was just getting fish and chips. And it was an entire mackerel, like with the eyes and head, everything. It threw me off. I ate it, but it threw me off at first.
And how did you survive the return and the flight out? Because it was so long.
So it took me about 3 days to adjust to the time change, because I made the sin of falling asleep when I landed in London. And then that just messed me up. So I got there Tuesday, London time. I wasn't right on my body clock until about Friday night. So that was kind of rough. And then I slept the entire flight on the way back thinking, oh, this is good. You know, I'll just be fine for all of Monday. As soon as I got back to my house, boom, fell asleep again, woke up, Monday Night Football was on.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a little bit, but I think I'm in Pullman now, actually. So
okay.
I made another trip, so I'm still adjusting just to everything.
Well, how did you adjust to what you saw in the field on Wembley Stadium, how they just absolutely dominated the Oakland Raiders?
I knew they would actually beat up on the Raiders, not even so much because of my confidence in the Seahawks. I had some, but I just kind of knew the Raiders weren't good. It was one of the few weeks this year where I kind of had a really good feel for what the opponent could and could not do. Denver was iffy because I wasn't sure on Keenum. Same thing with Trubisky. Cowboys kind of the same thing because I knew they had Zeke at the end of the day. Rams, actually, I knew what the Rams could do too. But the Oakland, I was just like, the quarterback's not very good. Their O-line's not very good. Their D-line's not very good. Those three things right there are a problem. You're going to be a bad team. So I kind of could see that come in. I didn't think that the D-line of the Seahawks would just take turns just, like, mugging Derek Carr. I thought maybe it would just be Frank, but no, it was Frank and his boys that did that. So that part was pretty interesting, but I knew they would. I think I did a prediction story and wrote that the Seahawks would win, like, 30-9, and it's real rare that I don't predict that the opposing team will score a touchdown, but I just had a feeling they weren't going to be able to. So I knew the Seahawks needed to beat them like that. And for the Seahawks' sake and for the rest of their season, it was good that they actually did go through and beat up on a bad team.
Mm-hmm. Because they didn't waste any time. They got the opening drive. That's the first opening drive touchdown since the third game of the 2016 season. But I think what's impressive right now, and how do you look at the way that the offensive line has come together in the last four games? Because, the difference from week one and two compared to weeks three through six is just, it's not even like it's the same team.
No, and we can point to, I mean, who was the guy that wasn't there in those first couple of weeks? It's DJ Fluker. You know, it's not a mystery as to what changed. I mean, obviously, a lot of the guys on the line are playing well. I mean, I think JR is playing well. Dwayne is playing well. I think even Jermaine is playing well. But you look at that first drive in particular, I just kept watching. I mean, all the runs weren't, you know, right behind DJ Fluker, but, I mean, they could have been. He is just moving people out of the way. I mean, you look at even the Rams game. He on, I think, Chris's touchdown. Maybe Mike Davis had the touchdown. He just puts Ndamukong Suh on his back. You know, you just don't do that to Sue. You know, DJ Fluker is making a world of difference on this team, and that's it. You can't give all the credit in the run game just to him, but like you said, you look at the last, let's say, 4 weeks. You know, he's the difference, I think, there. And you can see why Pete Carroll and Mike Solari were so excited about him all offseason. And we're just like, when he gets healthy, you got to take that with a grain of salt sometimes because, you know, in football, health is relative for the most part. But now that he is in there and he is healthy and he's bringing so much energy in the huddle, like, hey, these guys can't stop us. Let's just keep running it a lot. Let's just keep running it right down their throats. That's his type of mentality, and the whole kind of unit has adopted that. So I give a lot of the credit for what's going on right now with the Seahawks O-line to DJ.
And I think the sleeper in this is definitely J.R. Sweezy, because not that he's as dominating as DJ Fluker, but what he is, I think that, you know, he makes Justin Britt play a little bit better. I think because Justin Britt's more comfortable. Not that he wasn't comfortable with Ethan Posick, but I think there's a more of a comfort level there.
Yeah, no, there absolutely is. And I know you probably talked to Justin about it. I know I've talked to Justin. You mentioned what's changed at this run game. One of the first things he'll mention is JR in that comfort level. And, you know, he'll say things like, oh, we've played a lot of ball together, about the whole line. But, mm-hmm. I mean, who's he referring to? It's JR, right? Like, he's referring to Sweezy. And you look at the tape of him as well as similar to DJ, and that's just, oh, there was a lot of space on that run. Or this is how Chris Carson got to the second level here. It's because JR took, you know, defensive tackle and just moved him to Sweden, right, on this run. Like, that's what's going on when you put on the tape of these guys in the run game so far. Like, those two guys on the interior are making a world of difference. And you kind of figure two good interior guys would, because, you know, you look at last year, and the interior was just bad. Like, it wasn't that they couldn't run it forward. They were really good at running it backwards. Like, they were getting just stuffed. Thomas Rawls lost a two. Eddie Lacy lost a one. You know, Mike Davis lost it, whatever. You know, I think the last 2 weeks, I have to go back and look for sure. I think they only have two runs for loss in the past 2 weeks. I think they're both a loss of one. So that JR and DJ, what they're doing in the interior, is they've brought the identity that this team is looking for. Those two, if you had to give the most credit to someone on the Seahawks offense, I would really give it to JR and DJ through 6 weeks.
No question. And I think that is one very impressive part of this. What about, have you looked closely to see Jermaine Ifedi? He's a guy that we haven't mentioned in about maybe 3 weeks, which I would have to think is encouraging.
Yeah, that is. I always remind people that about offensive linemen. It's like, if we aren't saying their name, it's probably a good thing, especially with your tackles, right? And if you look big picture at it for the whole season, you could kind of assume or just like predict how Fetty's season was going to go. He was probably going to struggle the first 2 weeks because Khalil Mack and Von Miller are aliens, right? That's
right.
Just how this works. They destroy tackles. It doesn't really matter which tackles. They just destroy them. So you figured that was going to be a struggle. It was. He played all right in some snaps against each of those guys, but in general, it was a struggle. Russell was sacked 12 times in 2 games. You look at the rest of the schedule, there's no Khalil Mack, there's no Von Miller. Okay, boom. Ifedi doesn't struggle as much. It was, you could simplify it in that way. I know he had to go up against Sue and, you know, Donald did some things there. I think they double-teamed him, and he still got the sack on Russell, which is another alien. But it doesn't surprise me that he's kind of, again, like you mentioned, he's not a guy we're talking about. You can just look at the schedule and kind of see, oh, yeah, he can handle the rest of the load here. It's just like those first 2 weeks, you're going to be like, oh, God, what's going to happen? So Fetty, like I said, mentioned the whole line is playing well, and that includes Jermaine. You know, even cutting, I think he's cut down the penalties. I'd have to go back and double check that. He had a bad one, I believe, against the Rams. But in general, yeah, he's just a name we're not mentioning much anymore. And for him, that's a very, very, very good sign.
No question about it. Then, of course, the other, I think, big transition has been what's happened in the secondary, because I think that the coverage has been exceptional, and also now the hitting part, the fact that they've now knocked out four receivers in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think I'm still a little out on the secondary. I need to see it more over time. Like, I know there's some good players. I know Trey is a promising talent. We've both thought that for a while. Obviously, no, Shaquille is really good, although I think he struggled against the Rams, as did Justin Coleman. I mean, the Rams didn't punt. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Would they punt once? The Rams threw it all over those guys, and it wasn't just little dump-off stuff like Derek Carr was doing. He was throwing it down the field, throwing it in the middle of the field. They were moving the ball with ease. You know, knock out Cooper Kupp, knock out Brandon Cooks. Okay, fine. Now some dude named Reynolds goes off. You know, now Robert Woods goes off. You know, they were missing tackles in that game. This includes Tedrick. This includes Shaquille going against Robert Woods. So, and then obviously they dominated the Raiders because, again, the Raiders just aren't good. We'll learn a lot more about the secondary, I think, against Detroit. So that'll give me a good, like, three-game stretch to say, okay, what do the Seahawks have here in this secondary? Because, yeah, the Rams game was just not very good because the Rams just threw the ball all over the place against them. The Raiders game was super good because the Raiders are about as polar opposite of the Rams as you can get. So Detroit's a team that is going to sling it. Stafford's going to sling it. He's got the guys to sling it, too. So we'll see. I'm not completely sold on them being just like a solid unit. I think the pieces are there, but I think they have to survive another test. I think they'll get some good tests here in the next like 3 weeks.
And of course, what the return of KJ Wright and Ed Dixon? What do you think that's going to mean?
The KJ thing is super interesting. You think about this, John. They just decided to not play with a weak side linebacker, really. You know, they were using Michael Kendricks a little bit, but they were really throwing lineups out there of, like, Bobby Wagner and six DBs, you know, and still stopping the run. You know, against the Rams, you know, when they couldn't have Kendricks, they just said, hey, we're just kind of just not really going to play a weak side linebacker. We're going to use, like, Bradley McDougald in that role, and just kind of just throw Bobby out there as our linebacker and see what happens. They held Gurley under 80 yards, I think. But I think KJ coming back with the success they've already had doing that, I think KJ is going to make a world of difference. Like, their run defense, I think, is going to take another step there. And I think that'll help with their over-the-middle coverage as well, because I think that was really an issue against the Rams. They were really getting, like, to the middle of the field pretty well. Mostly Sean McVay is good at getting his guys in space. But you'd have to imagine that, you know, to shrink that space, it would help to have both KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner in there. I'm not sure how much they'll get from Ed there. I think, really, they were getting good tight end production, quote-unquote, from George Fant, to be honest. He wasn't obviously running routes. And so Ed obviously will bring that part of it. But in terms of just, like, blocking, George was doing his part in the snaps he was playing, I think only 30 in the past two games. So I'm not sure on Ed's production, but I think KJ is going to have the defense go to another level at a time when they really need it. The offenses they're about to play can be really explosive.
So what all do you have on the Athletic?
Oh, man, I think if you guys haven't seen it, everyone should check out the What It's Like to Cover series that we just dropped. It was so all of our guys wrote what it's like to cover their head coach. So, you know, our guy Matt Pence is the Sounders coach. We had, you know, Scott Service piece. I did a Pete Carroll piece. Jason Jenks did a John Schneider to end it, and it's a great piece. We have a Chris Peterson one as well. But that's the type of stuff that, you know, is different than, you know, the normal coverage that you would see in past years. You know, we have the freedom to do those type of cool, just little projects, not anything like groundbreaking. We didn't like discover a sex scandal or anything, but it's fun. It's insightful. It's unique to like all of our perspectives and skill sets. And it's super dope. Christian's is probably my favorite. I'm curious to see what your listeners, what their favorite ones were, but the Chris Peterson one, because he's just so boring, right? He's dull.
Yeah, pretty much.
Straight vanilla, as much as you can get. And Christian turned that into something hilarious. So, yeah, that's up now. All five stories are on my Twitter. I tweeted them out. But obviously, go to theathletic.com. It's all there. That's my favorite thing, probably. That we've done like in the past like month or so.
Well, rest up, get ready for the trip to Detroit, and get ready for another week. Michael Schonduger, thanks for joining us.
Always, thanks for having me, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Tara, how are you this morning?
I'm great. How are you?
Real good. Good to be back. Sorry to miss last week, but couldn't get all the equipment together. But we're back and back for the rest of the year, which is great.
Did you have a good trip?
It was okay. It was better than I thought, but still wasn't great. I mean, I didn't do any touring. I mean, basically, I stayed in the hotel the entire time. Just like Michael Sean was saying, it's a little bit tough to be able to, get going as far as just the sleep and that, because, I mean, your 8 hours difference. I mean, it's weird to do a 10 o'clock a.m. radio show or 9 o'clock, and it's like now 8, it's like 6 in the evening. That's how strange it is.
Yeah, that is pretty strange. What has surprised you the most about the Seahawks?
I think that the defense has come together a little quicker than expected. And again, I say that knowing that they still have trouble against really good quarterbacks. That's something that they have to fix. But I think that you can see that the secondary, I think, has been. They're now getting an identity and a personality, both in hitting and in coverage. They're really good in coming up and helping stop the run. I think that's encouraging. So I think that's the biggest thing I see, just that the defense has come on a little bit better than expected. And I guess the other surprise is that the running game has even been better than expected. I thought it was going to be okay. I thought maybe it could be top 15. But to be top 10 and now probably eventually top 5, that I did not expect.
Yeah, I agree with your points. I think the secondary has come on really strong, and kind of like with what the guest was saying, the biggest test will be against Phillip Rivers and Aaron Rodgers coming up, because they're great quarterbacks and can pick you apart if, like, find your weaknesses and just pick off with them. So you need to be careful with that. And I do like the running game also. Like, all three running backs are doing good. There are some differences in the running styles, though. I was just talking about it. Chris Carson's better at running people over, like Marshawn Lynch. But Penny's pretty good at making quicker reads than him. Like, if someone's in the backfield, just snapping his head really quick to the next hole.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a good observation. And that's some good progress that they're making there. And that you're right, there's three a little bit different styles, but they all three styles work. And what's nice is that that guards you against injury, because if you're going to be physical like Mike Davis, you're going to be physical like Chris Carson, they do have a tendency to get those injuries. And if that's going to be the case, then you have to kind of watch out. And now you can go to Penny. And that's why I never got to the rash opinion that Penny was any kind of a first-round bust. I mean, the other two guys have fit in better and fit in quicker.
Yeah, I wouldn't call Penny a bust either. If you think about it, college is a lot different than the pros. In fact, a lot of college players don't make it to the pros. So I think it's okay if he looked a little bit slower the first two games, but now he looks a lot better, like the games kind of slowed down for him.
Mm-hmm. And that was the thing, because I know I even talked to him about that, that the game was a little bit quicker than he expected, and he didn't have the three preseason games to get himself ready, and so he was caught cold in that opener, and then he did okay in the second half of the Chicago game. I mean, he's done well in the limited time he's been out there. It may not have reached the numbers of Davis or in Carson, but then, of course, he's the least experienced of the three.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Keller, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.